Hey everybody, it's Andrea. Today, Captain Picard and friends take a trip back in time. Charisse expertly explains how holodecks work, and we ask the question, when did Counselor Troy become a linguistics expert? Stay tuned and geek out with us.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
I'm your co-host, Andrea. Today, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 11, entitled The Big Goodbye, was written by Tracy Torme and directed by Joseph L. Scanlon. The stardate in this episode is 41997.7. This is a super fun episode. Like, there's a ton of like holodeck play and the characters are in like period costume. Like, I love this one. This is super fun.
I agree. And just before you do the rundown and we go through each of the episode or each of the step-by-step parts of the show, I have to say that this episode on whole was kind of a throwaway episode, right? We don't learn a ton about like character development. There's a little bit in there. However, it was such a fun throwaway episode that I can't even be mad at it. I was just like, this is just great. I love that when they time travel back to ancient Earth, it's just so fun.
100%. And I'm a big history buff and I love like 1940s. I'm a big fan of like 1920s kind of history and then like 1940s. 1930s was just kind of depressing because of the Great Depression. So
there is that.
Yeah. But like just the fashion and the music and all that, like actually at my house, we have a record player and I have a ton of like 1940s, like big band records. And like, I play them regularly. I love it. It's just such a like lovely sound. But anyway, yeah. So to have those characters that we know and love as Starfleet, you know, in their Starfleet uniforms, like in period clothes, like, oh, so fun.
So fun.
So before I get into the plot synopsis, I have a little bit of trivia that I thought was quite interesting. This episode won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Costume for a series.
Wow. I believe it. Their outfits were great.
They were amazing. And it's the only Star Trek episode ever to win a Peabody Award, which is an excellence in like radio, television, and like online media. Like excellence in storytelling. Yeah.
Huh.
Which is funny because it is kind of a throwaway episode.
Yeah. And I have to say the story's not great. Like the story has a ton of potential in the beginning and then it just never pays off. And you're like, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
So that's interesting that it won that award, but I don't know.
Right? Okay. So the plot summary of The Big Goodbye is that the Enterprise heads to Torona 4 to open negotiations with the Harada, an insect-like race that is unusually strict in matters of protocol. After practicing the complex greeting, Captain Picard decides to relax with the Dixon Hill story on the holodeck. The Harada arrive early and demand their greeting earlier than the agreed time and are insulted at having to talk to anyone other than the captain. The crew tries to communicate with Picard on the holodeck but finds it impossible. Something within the Harada signal has affected the holodeck's function, preventing the doors from opening or allowing communication with the crew inside. The crew inside also discover that the safety protocols have been disabled in the holodeck and the captain, along with Dr. Crusher and Data and others, could actually be in danger. So I did some background reading on this episode. The guy who was in charge of like making the Harada like costumes was really bummed that they sort of run out of like budget for this episode. Because he had created this cool, like kind of insecty hive mind sort of look. Although after seeing the Antikins and the Sele, I'm kind of glad we didn't see them.
They mentioned in passing, like, oh, it's an insect race. Like they mentioned it very quickly in passing, but at no point do you see this alien race in any way, shape or form.
Right.
We just hear their voice like a couple times and that's pretty much it. And I was kind of like, huh, we've never seen an insect race on this show that I can recall. And maybe there's a reason for that. Yeah. Cause the Antikins and the Sele were not awesome.
No, they definitely were not. And I kind of don't want to be like, trying to believe that Captain Picard is like having a chit chat with like a wasp
or a giant roach or something.
Be super gross. But yeah, so there was that. And I totally believe that they like blew through the budget because they had all those amazing costumes and the sets and like, and really
the period cars even.
Oh my God. Yes. And they had to film, I think it was Universal Backlot.
Yeah. What it looks like to me. I'm very familiar with the Universal Backlot. And I was like, I love that street. Oh, that's exactly where. Yeah. That scene when they walk into the holodeck, when they all kind of walk in as a group, that is the same part of the back lot where they filmed Back to the Future. It's that same square.
Get out.
It's like, it's the square that they film everything. They film everything in that square.
It's supposed, it's supposed to be like the New York square, something like that.
Yeah. And it's kind of like this, it's like every city. That's kind of what it is. Like you can morph it in. It looks like Chicago and it looks like New York. And it looks like, you know, it's just kind of like a bunch of storefronts or houses or kind of whatever it looks like, depending on the angle that they put the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was really excited when I saw that because I'm like a huge Universal Studios nerd. So I was like, yay, they're on the back lot.
You're like, I've been there. I've done that tour.
Yes. Many, many a time.
So actually, speaking of that, before we kind of back up and start at the beginning, I freaking love the look of that city.
Yes.
With the holodeck doors open and you can see the hallway.
So cool. And you can see people walking in the hallway, which they don't really do that in the future. And actually by the end of the episode, they don't do it either. But they don't usually, when the holodeck doors are open and someone's in the holodeck, usually it's just to like an empty corridor or wall.
Yes. Yes.
But this this was the first time that I remember ever seeing the holodeck doors open and people walking through the hall on the ship, just like going about their business on the other side of the door. It's usually just like a wall or nothing. And
yes.
I was like, that looks so cool. I do not know how they did that special effect, but that looks super
cool. It looked amazing. I loved it. I loved it. Okay. So to start off, the Enterprise is meeting up with this, that, like we said, the insect race, the Harada, and they have like super duper strict protocol for their greetings. They only speak to the captain. They don't speak to anybody else. And apparently they're trying to open up like trade negotiations, and they have sort of this history, or Starfleet has a history of not nailing the greeting, and their language is like crazy complex apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been numerous times that like other captains have tried to open up trade negotiations and they failed because the greeting was botched in some way. And then it like resulted in like 30 years of like silence from the Harada. So Captain Picard is over there. He's in the ready room and he's studying. And the first thing I wonder is, did Troy suddenly become like a language tutor? Like, what is she?
That is literally what I put in my notes. I was like, since when is she a linguist? I mean, Troy just pulls all kinds of fancy toys out of her bag of tricks, right? A couple episodes ago, she was a hypnotherapist suddenly, but at least that's still in the realm. In the realm of therapy, it's like, okay, maybe, sure. I mean, she's a therapist, but now she's all like, no, that's how the accent goes. And I'm like, all right, now, wait a minute. Like, she is not also some like expert at communication. If anything, it should be Data in there who's saying how to pronounce it.
That would make way more sense.
Way more sense. Yeah. It makes no sense for Troy to be the tutor, but anyways. Whatever.
Yeah, no sense whatsoever. I wrote, when did Troy become a tutor? Because that doesn't make any sense, right? Also, for the greeting, if you just write like a standard greeting, like greeting from the Federation, we hope to whatever, whatever, a new dawn, you're dawning of
we
a new
come
day.
In peace.
Exactly. Just memorize that bit. Like, why do you need to? He's like, if it has two bars over it, the B becomes a Z and the T becomes a W or whatever. Right. It's like, just memorize like your 3-line greeting and like, okay, whatever. Anyway. Also there's a shorty uniform, like in the first like 10 seconds of the episode, which I thought was pretty awesome. I was like, oh, yep. No, we're still in shorty territory, but all right.
We are. Yep. Those outfits must've been cold.
Yes. Right. I know. I would have been miserable. But so he's getting really tired and really frazzled. And Troy says, hey, there have been a bunch of upgrades to the holodeck. Like, why don't you go take it for a spin? And he says, ooh, I have been wanting to kind of do like that Dixon Hill program. Like, I wanted to check it out. So Dixon Hill books are not real books. They're
fictional only, in the world of Star Trek.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. They only exist in the world of Star Trek. And it's basically like detective noir, like 1930s, 1940s detective noir.
And somehow stories. Sherlock Holmesy, because that was mentioned in the episode where they said, oh, it was the Beverly says, oh, that was the 20th century Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. It kind of, I guess it kind of, right. Like whoever was doing behind all the writing, like they were really a big Sherlock Holmes fan, because that is like a thread that gets pulled all the time. So, the writer of this episode really wanted to lend heavily from The Maltese Falcon, which was a classic detective noir story, and a movie starring Humphrey Bogart, which is pretty cool. And actually, the bad guy who plays Cyrus Redblock was famous in Hollywood as a character actor who would play like mobbed up tough guys in actual 1940s movies.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And he had he had like a personality or he had a reputation for having a personality much like the mobbed up tough guy, like in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So Will Wheaton in an interview said he was actually really like intimidated to film with this guy. They didn't have any scenes together, but to be on set at the same time, because this guy had a personality for being like a reputation for being a real tough guy. And he was only 15 at the time.
Right, right.
So that's kind of scary. But anyway, so he shows up in the holodeck in his Starfleet uniform. He's just kind of coming to poke around. And one of the things that I noticed right off the bat is that in subsequent episodes where the holodeck is used, none of the holodeck characters notice that anybody's like dressed differently, like a Starfleet uniform. They don't notice that there are any alien races. Like in A Fistful of Data's, Worf is in there. And one of the bad guys in the holodeck says, "You're ugly," or you're like, "Where'd you get so ugly?" or whatever. But he it doesn't register that like, "Oh, you're an alien race" or whatever.
Right, right.
So I thought it was weird in this one that they're like, "What's up with your outfit?"
Yeah.
And and they constantly point out that like Data looks different. And I thought that's weird because that doesn't carry among the rest of the episodes.
Right. I think that's one of those parts of this show that kind of evolved over time in this episode. And then we'll talk about it a little more at the end of the episode too. There's another little like weird thing that happens. But I think in the beginning, they were just still playing around with it and what the holodeck can do and what it's like and what the characters are like. And so this is just how they started, because when we think about how it would be, we think they are real characters and they're seeing the world as we're seeing the world. And so they would be like, "Why are you wearing that weird outfit?" or "What's wrong with your skin?" But then what they do is over time, as they evolve how the holodeck works, then it becomes something where they're just not aware, where they're just in their holodecky world and they can't tell the difference. So I think it's just one of those things where it's like it's early days.
Yeah, I think you're right. But God, I love like how much time they spend on the holodeck. This episode is like 80% holodeck, which I love. I love like, I wish there were more holodeck like episodes, but
yeah. And I like how they keep saying that Data's from South America when he's clearly an albino. Like, I was like, why didn't they pick a cold place? That was my thought. Like, why didn't anyone say like Antarctica or something? Like, you know, I don't know. I was just like, pick like a tropical, you know, right next to the equator place, like not Alaska. No, we're going to go with that.
I mean, I feel like Picard just didn't have any time to think. So he's like, oh, he's from a different place. And then Data, because he's big on like buying in to like the character, he's like, I'm from South America. So let's back up a little bit. So he goes in his Starfleet uniform. He meets with this woman who's like, "Hey, someone's trying to kill me."
And this is Picard we're talking about.
Yes. And then she kisses Picard, takes his business card and leaves. And then he's like, I got to get changed and whatnot. Like, this is not the right. I'm not ready for this. Right. So he goes to the observation lounge to have a meeting, I guess, about the Harada, I assume.
Yeah, it was about the Harada.
He spends all this time just like fanboying over.
And it's so hilarious. Right. He's like, and then it looked really real. And I looked out the window and there were automobiles, actual automobiles. And everyone's like so excited. And then it's like, as the steam is picking up, he's like, "Right, so we've met to talk about the Harada." And I thought that was so hilarious.
It's like an expensed lunch, you know, where you're like, we need to talk about work for a minute to like, for this to qualify as like a work meeting.
Totally.
But yeah, he totally lets him, he outs himself and he's like, "When that woman kissed me, it was so," and it's like, ooh, back it up, Picard. You're kissing holograms.
There were some wonderful things in that specific scene. So many things that I loved about that scene of him fanboying about the holodeck. There was the fact that Wesley and Worf were actually in there in the ready room. And talking I was like, automobiles. Look at them. Just being in the ready room. I was like, hey, Worf's first time in the ready room. Like, now he's kind of like sort of part of the...
You mean in the observation lounge?
Yeah, in the observation lounge. Sorry. I was like, so he's sort of like part of the, you know, he's got a role to play. But then I saw Wesley and I was like, ah, maybe he doesn't. Because Wesley's kind of like, you know, I mean, he barely has a name at this point. But whatever. Whatever. They're in there. And then there's this part where he like invites Beverly to go to the holodeck with him. And it totally, you know, she's rubbing off the lipstick from the holodeck kiss, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
She's rubbing off the lipstick, which now that I think about it, should not have existed outside of the holodeck.
You know, you're right.
Because
nerd catch. Yeah. Yep. It shouldn't have been there. Should have disappeared when he walked away.
Should have disappeared when he walked out of the, but anyways, so you're she's rubbing off the holographic lipstick that's somehow still on Picard's mouth. And they have this like really tender moment where you're seeing that little spark between them. And he's like, you know, "I would love for you to come" or whatever. And she's like, "I'd be happy to check it out." And they kind of are making a date. And then he immediately goes, "And I want to invite so-and-so because he's a historian and he would love it." And she's just like, ugh. She just sits down like, yeah, like he's just so aloof. to what's going on.
This, you know, we see little touches of like potential romance between Picard and Crusher. A couple of times, you know, at Encounter at Farpoint, they had sort of a moment. They had a couple moments here and there, but this is the first time that he invites her somewhere and she's like noticeably excited to go. And you could kind of see she's getting those little flutters, which is pretty sweet. And then she goes, I know who could be a fantastic third wheel is Waylon, because he's a 20th century historian. And her face is just like, you know?
Yeah. And then she just kind of collapses into her chair. Just like, ugh, like why even, what was the point of that? And good on her. She actually goes, because I would kind of feel like, well, on second thought, you know, or like maybe another time, or I don't know, like I probably would have gotten out of it with that level of disappointment you could see in her. But
yeah,
she, good on her. She actually was like, I will go. She kept that commitment.
Well, you know, and also being Beverly, you have a perfect out. You could be like, I'm the only doctor on this whole ship, so I need to be on duty. See ya.
I feel like there might be a medical emergency, so can't really make it.
Mm-hmm. So with the Harada meeting like 11 hours away or some huge amount of time, Picard puts on period appropriate clothes and goes into the holodeck again as the character Dixon Hill. I am so used to seeing Captain Picard in Starfleet uniform, but holy crap, whoever did the costuming for this found the suit, like the suit did not wear him. Like he wore the hell out of that suit and the hat and like the duster. He wore the hell out of it. And so did Data. Like, I love that Data showed up after having, you know, on the computer, like read all the Dixon Hill stories, which little like background catch. While he's at the computer port, like reading all of the stories, the first cover of the first Dixon Hill story comes up and it says Dixon Hill and the mystery of whatever. And it's, the book is written by Tracy Torme, who was actually the writer of this episode. So I thought, what a sweet way.
Super clever.
Right? Mm-hmm. To like put yourself kind of like into the Star Trek like universe. I just thought that was
forevermore.
Yeah. If I were writing an episode, like I'd have my name kind of snuck in there in just some like tiny little background way that you wouldn't normally notice.
It's kind of like when you go camping or go to a cabin at like outdoor ed when you're in sixth grade and you see like so-and-so was here etched into the bedpost.
Yeah.
That was kind of like what was going on in this episode. It was like Tracy Torme was here.
Yes. It was very cool. So Data has read all the stories at like super crazy speed, which we love to see because that's his like android powers coming out. And then he shows up in the most ridiculously fantastic pinstripe suit and fedora. And the fedora, because I'm a hat fiend, the fedora matches the pinstripes. I'm like, oh my God. Like, and his pocket square was like very fancy. Like he just looked amazing. Amazing.
And talk about a third wheel. He invited himself to the holodeck. Nobody invited him. He just shows up, you know, Picard's like, you know, Beverly's going to meet us later. Let's go, Waylon. And then shoom, you know, the doors to the turbo lift open and Data's like, hey, I'm ready to go. Who invited you, Data? He's like, well, I've read everything there is to read about it. And then they look at each other. They look at him and they're
like, fine.
All right, come on, let's just go. And I was like, talk about a third wheel. Data's just like, I overheard you saying you're going to the holodeck. So I am coming
too. This was supposed to be, maybe Picard didn't know it, but it was supposed to be a date between Beverly and Picard.
Right.
And then Waylon was the third wheel. And then Data was like, I'm a fourth wheel myself up in here.
Yep.
He really did. But you know what? It only could have been Data who could have done that, because any other crew member would have known, like, you don't just invite yourself over. But anyway,
well, they would have had those social skills that Data doesn't have.
No, he does not. He does
and
not.
And that Picard doesn't have either, because he would have recognized that Beverly wanted it to be a date. So
yeah.
There's learning and growing to be had by all.
You're right. So then we have that super cool moment where the holodeck doors open. We see the hallway. We see the bridge between the 24th century and the 20th century. And it's so cool. It's so cool. And they have the like kind of classic film noir element of like steam is rising like off the street, like, and actually
it's bustling. It's night.
Yes, the writers wanted to film the holodeck scenes in black and white, which would have been super cool, but the director Joseph L. Scanlon kind of shot it down and said that is gonna, it's A, gonna be too distracting, and B, the holodeck itself could be all the characters and the set could be in black and white, but the holodeck doesn't have the power to change the crew members. So they would have still been in color, which wouldn't have like made sense. I don't know. I thought it would have been cool to have it in black and white.
Yeah. They actually do that in Voyager, which I talk about Voyager a lot. They do that in there where when they do they? Old school. Yeah. When they do old school shows, everybody in the holodeck is in black and white and you're like, that's neat.
That is super cool.
So they could have totally done that. However, if they had done that in this episode, we would have missed out on Beverly, you know, because she's a redhead with her red lipstick and just like looks so stunning.
That she looked crazy good.
She would have still been beautiful, but it wouldn't have been as like, oh my word, you know?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. So they're reading the newspaper. That's when they come up with the whole data's from South America bit, which is pretty funny. And they find out that the woman who had met with Captain Picard actually has been killed. Mm-hmm. And now there's sort of an inquiry going on. The cops show up and they're like, you know, we need to take you downtown for a little meeting. And Picard could not be more tickled by this.
Right.
He's like, then he starts doing the like, for what? You know, he starts getting really into the character and kind of into the meat of that. It's super fun to see him do that.
It is. And it's kind of funny because throughout all of these scenes, they're all so giddy and excited about every single thing. They're like, we're getting arrested. Oh my gosh, we're going downtown. This is so great. He's being interrogated. Woohoo.
Yes.
Like, they're so excited about all of these things that if this was real, would not be super fun.
Yeah, no, totally not. So Dr. Crusher does show up while he's being interrogated, and she is a total knockout. She's got like the big curly red hair. She has a gorgeous fascinator, which is the name of that type of hat that has netting. She just looks incredible. And you know, Gates McFadden is a very accomplished dancer. And I love...
Oh, I didn't know that.
She is. She, well, remember, there's an episode where she teaches Data how to tap dance. That's really her.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. In the episode Data's Day, when Data has to learn how to dance for
for the wedding.
Yeah. So she gives him some lessons and she teaches him how to tap dance. And then he goes, great, I'm ready to dance at the wedding. She's like, whoa, you didn't say this was for a wedding. It's a different type of dancing you do at a wedding. But that was really her tap dancing. She's a very accomplished dancer. And she performs, I think, not infrequently. But anyway, so she's a dancer and she shows up and being a Starfleet medical officer, not used to walking in high heels. And she does that little twisted ankle kind of trip.
Yeah, where she almost trips. I thought that was great.
I thought that was so great, especially knowing like she's such a great dancer. Like the woman is used to heels and she like just made that look so natural. That was great.
That's exactly how I look in heels. I'm not an accomplished dancer. So flats are for me. But yeah, so she walks in, she's all excited. She finds them at the police station. How does she do that? I don't know. It's holodeck magic. So she finds them at the police station and she's talking to Waylon and finds out that Picard's being interrogated. And she's just so excited. And she goes, why can't we all be interrogated?
Why does he get to have all the fun?
And then she sits down next to this woman who is wearing like a skirt that's shorter than her skirt and showing a little more cleavage and stuff. And so then Beverly kind of hitches up her skirt.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, you know, okay, you know, this is, you know, she's trying to blend with the times, trying to figure out what she should look like. And then suddenly this cop comes over and picks the woman up. And now it's clear that this woman is like a prostitute.
Yep.
And so then Beverly's like, ooh, okay. So then she kind of pulls she kind of buttons her shirt up like, oh, okay, maybe don't copy her 100%.
I love that she kind of takes cues from the girl. She's looking in her compact. She's adjusting her mirror. She's kind of zhuzhing her hair up like that. Mm-hmm. That was all pretty great. I did love that line when she found out that Picard was being interrogated. And she's like, why does he get to have all the fun? And I went, that's right, girl. That's right. Just because you're a woman doesn't mean you have to sit there and be a background player. Like, get in there and get interrogated. Get in there, girl. Go have some fun. Like, that's what I felt like. That's exactly what I would have done. Like, when I see, I'm a huge tomboy. So when I see like my guy friends and I, like if we're out doing something fun and they're doing something fun and dangerous, I'm like, why do you get to have all that? Move over. Let me climb down that cliff or whatever.
Yeah. Right? Like, I would, if we're talking about climbing, I'm all about it. If we're talking about being interrogated, I'm going to pass.
Yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and let other people enjoy that particular version of fun. But yeah, so we're in there. And then there's this this guy who's watching her, you know, fluffing her hair and stuff like that.
Oh, that he's creepy just like, cop.
Yeah. I don't even know if he was a cop or I don't know who this dude was.
He was just like a bailiff or something. Yeah.
He was just kind of sitting and enjoying the view of Beverly Crusher. And then he goes and offers her a stick of gum, you know, as his, you know, peace offering. And she, being from the 24th century, does not know what gum is. So she chews it like three times and then swallows it, which if you guys ever had gum when you were a kid, you probably swallowed some and you know, it's not that great. So she's sitting there choking down this gum, trying to swallow. And he's like, I got two tickets here. You want one of these tickets? And she's just
Tommy
like,
Dorsey.
You know, and I'm like, wow, this is so hilarious. Like,
That is pretty great. Yeah, when he's like, you like Tommy Dorsey, which was a big 1940s big band conductor. So, and he said, I've got 2 tickets for the dance. And I'm like, wow, a dance. Like, that's not something you hear in Star Trek. We're going to the big dance. Like,
that's something I hear in life. Like, that's just a, yeah, that's
not after high school. Not after high school. No, not at all. So, all right. So back to the real world though, the Harada have shown up early, which rude. And in an attempt to find the captain, the crew realizes, uh-oh, we can't reach them. Because the Harada do this like big kind of sweeping scan of the ship.
Yeah.
And you see the holodeck panel like blinking out. My question was this. When Beverly goes in late to meet them in the holodeck, the doors are kind of not opening right. And they keep opening and shutting on her. That's clue number one that something is wrong. How do you not, you know, use your comm badge to be like, hey, the doors are acting. Somebody come and take a look at this real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that there's something wrong with the doors, like they're just being a little weird. But I would not, if I was in Beverly's shoes, I would not think, oh, there was a giant scan that came through and made the holodeck so that once I go in, we won't be able to communicate and all the safeties will be like, none of that would cross my mind. I would just be thinking, oh, the doors are a little stuck. Like we need, I'll get Geordi on that once we're done with our program. That would be my thought. It's just like, it's literally just the doors and nothing else. And you could see that the panel, when she walked in, was still, it was lit, but it was blinking. And the doors were kind of fixing.
Right. Yeah.
But as soon as she went in and they closed, the lights went off altogether. So like it just went, the system just went down from the outside. And I would not have picked that up if I was in her shoes. I would have just been like, okay, I'll get a crew on this. Like, I mean, yeah, she probably should have called right away, but I would just be like, oh, I'll get a crew on the door later. And then I would have been totally shocked later on and then said, that's why the doors were doing that. Like it would have been, you know, so after the fact.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. I could see, I guess I could see being like, eh, you know, I'm about to go play in the holodeck. When I get out, I'll call Geordi or whatever.
Yeah, like, or whoever come and take a look. Doors. Yeah.
There's got to be somebody below Geordi that's like the Enterprise handyman.
The door specialist. Yeah, because actually Geordi's not that yet. He works on the bridge doing, he like pilots and then also is fixing the holodeck. We're not quite sure what Geordi does yet in the show.
He doesn't have a role that's set yet.
But later on, it would make no sense for him to be the only one who could fix a door. We would definitely call somebody else. Ensign in on that.
Okay, so Riker is trying to reach the captain in the holodeck and realizes that something has gone amiss and they can't get a hold of him. So Wesley wants to go down and help because, of course, being Wesley, he's like, I've studied all the schematics for the holodeck. Like, dude, you're 15. When would you have had the time?
In his spare time. That's all he does is study schematics.
This is the only time. And, you know, we've talked about this a bunch and listeners of our podcast will know, like, we love us some Wesley Crusher, which we recognize a lot of people don't. But I just love him because I had a crush on him when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But this is one time that I was kind of annoyed by him because I was like, really? You know all the schematics. And then the minute they get down to the holodeck.
Right. To fix it.
The actual Starfleet officer who's working on it, Geordi, just backs up and lets this kid start playing.
Right.
And then he just looks over his shoulder and he's like, ooh, just be careful. Okay, let me know if you see anything. Like, no, your roles are reversed. Like, it should be Geordi working on it. And Wesley is just like being nervous kind of in the corner. Right. It's like, why or is going, Wesley?
Is my mom okay?
Yeah.
Have you heard from my mom or something? And then at the end of the episode, you see that Wesley has now amassed a crew of engineers. There's a whole team of engineers around him looking at him working. They're just like all staring at him. And I was like, I think some of these guys are superfluous. I don't know if we need all these guys to just watch Wesley do his magic. Him work.
Especially when the terminal that he's working at is really only big enough for one 15-year-old kid. Like, it's not like you're working on an engine and you're like, hold this while I do this over here. Like, really in like a 3x2 space and that's it. So Riker storms down with Wesley and he goes, have you tried the comms? And Geordi sounds annoyed. He's like, yeah.
Which Riker proceeds to then try the comms. And it's like, but what's funny about that is this is exactly what people do, right? Is if there's like two people and, you know, they walk up to a door and they're like, hey, did you try the knob? And they're like, yeah, it's locked. That person will almost 100% of the time try the same exact door. And then they go, oh, it's locked. And then you're like, didn't I just say that? I literally just asked me and I just told you and we just had this discussion and then you tested it.
I'm so guilty of that. Oh my God.
We all do that. And it makes no sense, but for some reason we just can't believe something so simple hasn't been tried.
We have to confirm it ourselves. Yeah.
That was the other thing is, you know, Riker was all like, I'm going down there. And then Wesley's like, I'm going down there too. And Troy's like, you know, and he's like, no, Wesley, this is no place for you. You need to be on the bridge. Technically, no, you need to be on the bridge, because if the captain is not available, you are the captain, sir. And you need to be your butt on the bridge, because Data's also not available. So you don't even have a second in command to take over
now
when
you're
gone.
Now it's Tasha's on the bridge. And you know, she's just going to shoot at anything that comes
flying.
She's
going to start blowing people up and starting wars. So you need to stay on the bridge. If anything, Wesley can go, right?
Yeah.
But then Troy's like, no, 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 take him, because his mom's, you know, affected too. So he's like, all right, come on, Wes. So then they go down.
Thank you,
Wesley's
Troy.
Like, move out of the way, Geordi. Wesley to the rescue.
Yeah.
And then we've got Riker standing there going, did you try the comms? Maybe I'll try the comms.
Yeah.
Did you try knocking on the door real hard? Riker, can you go back to the bridge? You have nothing to add here. Can you go back? We will let you know.
Literally micromanaging the shit out of this teenager. And they're like, you're just standing here taking up valuable space. Like, go away. And we literally have communication badges. Like, we will calm you immediately. You're so
don't
right.
You have the Harada to worry about. Yeah. Don't worry about that. We will handle this.
Right. Okay. So they have no idea what is going on the holodeck. And I think I really can't stress enough how they don't know what's going on the holodeck.
Uh-huh.
They have no idea, because they can't contact them. And that's going to come into play in a couple of minutes when we get to this. But let's just kind of keep that little nugget in mind. They don't know what the F is going on the holodeck. So one of Cyrus Redblock's goons shows up with a gun. And I think it's hilarious that they're all in the office and Beverly's sitting on the table. And that's very like 1940s, that she's kind of perched on the table and judging her hair. And this guy shows up with a gun and Beverly goes, ooh, it kind of starts clapping, because again, this is just a fantasy world that they're playing.
Right. They're, and like, it's so real that they think it's
danger.
So fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's super fun. It's like when I go to Disneyland and ride the Indiana Jones ride, I'm like, wee, a snake. Oh, look at the lava. Yeah. Ha ha. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because of course there's no real danger. So, this goon, though, Mr. Leech, his patience is running out, and he shoots Waylon. And when he shoots Waylon, Waylon falls back, and Beverly goes, very good.
Yeah, they all actually start applauding. They were like, woo!
Yeah.
Like, man, this show just keeps getting better.
Yes.
And then Waylon is like, he's the only one not clapping all of a sudden. And he pulls up his hand and it's like covered in blood. And they're like, what the, you know, and I love that Beverly, like, in that ridiculous outfit, that's not helpful at all if you're trying to, you know, have an emergency.
Nope.
But even in that, she rips off her beautiful gloves. She gets down in there. She starts putting pressure on the wound. You know, I mean, she totally goes into doctor action. And I was like, she's pretty cool.
I think Beverly is, I don't say this phrase very often, but I think Beverly is the ultimate boss bitch. I really think she is. Mm-hmm. Her son could be in danger. She's doing her job. People are getting shot. She's in 1940s garb. She's doing her job. Like, mm-hmm. the woman doesn't really ever get hysterical. She just is mm-hmm. always doing her job. She is
thank
a badass.
Because I would boycott this show if she broke into tears. I'd be like, we already have one of those. Yeah. Like, we got one.
We have Tasha, who's going to go into like fight mode.
Right.
Troy, who's going to start crying. And then, yeah, you need somebody who's like more.
And then you need someone who's going to just do what needs to get done. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So there was this little moment when they're trying to get more light over to Waylon, because Beverly, you know, she needs more light. And Data picks up the lamp and carries it over. And the plug comes unplugged. And so the lamp turns off. Mm-hmm. And I love that he's kind of like, what? Like, he's kind of flicking the light bulb and he's kind of tapping on the shade. But Captain Picard, without a second thought, picks up the prong and plugs it in. And I thought, how would you know how to do that?
Well, because he saw it come out.
Oh, did he? Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I just saw
him. He saw it come out. Data didn't see it come out. And that's why Data was like, huh, let's see. Maybe you tap it. Maybe you rub it. Like, yeah. How do you make this come back on? You know, and so Picard was like, huh, let's see. Maybe if we just... oh, there we go. And it's funny because even when he plugged it in, Data still didn't realize that Picard had plugged it in. He was just like, oh, it's working again. And yes. Just like set it down.
That was, you know what? Props to you, Brent Spiner, because that was excellent prop work right there. Like, mm-hmm. he was working with that prop so well and was kind of like, oh, like when it
yeah.
got back on. I thought that was great. So, okay, here is some like, here's some like prime directive E type stuff. They proceed to tell Cyrus Redblock, who's now like the big mob guy who's made his entrance. And he's like, I need the object, which of course.
Oh, wait, before this, before he comes in. Sorry, one scene before this. So Leech has now shot this guy, has shot Waylon. And we're like, what the heck? And so before the lights over there, everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is real. What's going on? And then Picard, you know, then Leech is like, I'm telling you, you better give me the object or else. And Picard just smacks the gun out of his hand and backhands him.
Yes.
I was like, did Picard just backhand somebody? They were all about backhanding in season one, apparently. So he backhands him and he's just like, you're going to be sorry about that. And Leech just scurries out like a little rat. And then yep. he comes back with his big boss and another goon.
Yeah.
And the big boss now was like, I want the item. I'm looking for the item, you know, and he's all, who was the one who struck you? And it's like, it was him, boss. It was him, yeah. you know, pointing at Picard.
Little weasel.
And so he gets to go get his, you know, his comeuppance or whatever. He goes over and he pistol whips Picard. he backhands him, but with a gun.
Yep.
And then Picard has this gushing blood out of his mouth, which is so hilariously corn syrup. And you're yep. just like, and it's like not even like on the side of his mouth. It's coming out of his mouth. Like he's just spitting it out. And you're like, I don't know about, and it's like really, really bad special effects.
How many takes and resets did they have to do?
Because to get that one, which was not that great.
You know, I think about that kind of stuff all the time. The more I hear about like behind the scenes stuff where, for example, another show that I really love, Downton Abbey, there's a scene where at this very fancy dinner party, one of the main characters, his ulcer bursts. He has an ulcer and it bursts. And so he just goes like spewing blood all out of his mouth and it gets all over the tablecloth and on people's dresses and all that
like
stuff.
Like Kill Bill style? It's just kind like spraying
of,
all that?
Oh, kind of. I mean, not like Tarantino level spraying blood, because Tarantino uh-huh. will put blood in a sprinkler and let that baby fly. But
yeah.
it's like projectile, like it's blood gross. Vomit. It's really gnarly. So I was watching some behind the scenes and they were talking about how like worried the actor was about doing that scene and having to get it right the first time. Cause he's like, if I don't get it right the first time, they're going to have to reset the tablecloth, take off all the plates, put all those back. The women are going to have to get into different dresses. You're going to have to remove every single site or like spot of blood because mm-hmm. it can't be hanging around there. Like before he has this like explosion. So they had to do two takes on that. And he was like, thankfully it was done after two takes, but it takes like hours in between mm-hmm, to reset everything. Yeah. So to have blood gushing out and it's coming down onto the floor and onto your suit, like you need to get that right quickly.
Yeah. Thankfully for this, he just had like some spittle. So for him, they could just, you know, he could just like wipe his mouth gently and then reset right after that. So it wasn't sprays of blood, but I just was like, oh man, these special effects going on right here are really tacky and cheap because they didn't want that, you know, special effect guy that they've been using for the whole season so far. They wanted some like close ups. So they had to do it a little bit differently with their stunts that they pulled. But anyway, so okay, now Big Boss is in and he's like, I want the item.
Yes.
All right, keep going, Andrea.
Yes. So Picard totally breaks the prime directive, which I think doesn't matter because it's a holodeck. So
yeah, it doesn't matter for
but
a holodeck.
But he's like, we're from a different world, we're from a different time, we're from the future, we're on a freaking spaceship. And this guy, again, this goes back to like later episodes that have the holodeck character would be like, you're crazy. I don't know what you're talking about. But this guy is like, really? A future, you say? A spaceship, you say? Like he is not missing a beat.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, which is totally, totally bogus.
Right.
Meanwhile, Riker gets the call from Wesley because suddenly Wesley's in charge of the freaking holodeck. And not the actual like lieutenant commander, but whatever. So Wesley tells Commander Riker that he might fix the holodeck because remember they're starting to sweat bullets because the Harada are still waiting
right.
mm-hmm. to speak to the captain. And Commander Riker has said like, hey guys, it's Commander Riker. It's going to be a few minutes. And they're like, we do not speak to subordinates.
Right.
Like, don't insult us by contacting us again. Like we will wait for the captain. So their biggest concern is we need to get the captain out of here or out of the holodeck onto the bridge. So he can do this greeting and then we can kind of start like negotiating with the Harada. It's not high risk, really. It's like, it's going to be a few minutes. Let's just wait. But here's what Wesley says. I think I could get them off the holodeck, but it could also backfire and they could all just cease to exist. And Riker goes, do it. It's like, wait a second. You have no idea that they're in mortal danger in there. Like, again, they don't know what's going on inside. So they don't know that somebody's been shot. They don't know any of that.
Yeah.
All they know is that a race of hornets are waiting mm-hmm. for a greeting and you are willing to gamble Picard's mm-hmm. life, Crusher's life, Data's life, and Waylon's life mm-hmm. just for a greeting that could have probably be done like 20 or 30 minutes later. Like, are you kidding me, Riker? That's a horrible move. Like,
yeah, they didn't have a lot of options. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of options because he was even like, well, can we just wait? Like, can we do it later? And Wesley was like, if we do it now or we do it later, the risk is going to be the same. Like this is what we got. So he was just like, well, all right, then let's just do it. And I don't know if more time would have helped them come up with a better solution. But yeah, you're right. On the inside, they had no idea that the Harada had showed up early. On the outside, they had no idea that Waylon was slowly bleeding out from a gut shot. So there was just like a lot of things we don't know going on right now.
I could just see like if that had gone badly, Riker weeks later being in like an inquiry meeting and they're right. Like, so let me get this straight. You didn't want to make the Harada wait any longer. So you
vaporized the captain.
Killed mm-hmm. yeah, the chief medical officer and the captain and Data and
some and the only getting, android in Starfleet.
Yeah.
And then some random extra who was only there to get shot.
Yep. So you gambled all of their lives for a chance positive encounter with an alien race. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to make captain anytime soon, buddy.
Yeah, that like, might have been a court martial. I'm sure there's some kind of law against vaporizing a captain, even accidentally. I'm sure there's something. But yeah, so here's the thing that bothers me in this scene, where the big bad guy is, you know, talking and doing his bad guy monologue, which was kind of like expected for a mobbed up tough guy in a 40s noir type film.
Yes.
The challenge for me is we never know what the item is. And we don't really need to know, but it's not like, it's not something that I care enough about. Like I need to know something more about this storyline. So he's doing all these monologues where he's like, I'm a very reasonable man and the blah, blah, blah. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, okay. I get it. It does have that feeling of a mob or whatever, but we never actually solve this mystery. We never know why the woman was killed. We never know what the item was.
Nope.
We never get any resolution.
That's
Captain
true.
Captain Picard just cuts the cord and is like, we're from a different place. We're from a spaceship. You know, like, let's just forget this storyline or whatever. And I feel like the mob's just like, we don't know what you're talking about. But now that you've opened this secret door, because Wesley finally gets the door open somehow.
Ooh, they like, are in a snowstorm though, momentarily, which is pretty cool.
Right. They're in a snowstorm momentarily.
That's a very cool effect.
And what's cool is when they go back to the office, they're still covered in snow.
Yes.
But there's no snow anywhere else. I was like, oh, that's a nice little touch to be like a little like residue from the snowstorm.
Not only that, but if you think about the logistics of filming that scene, you had to place them in an actual snowstorm and you had to keep all of their positions the same relative to each other. So they all look like the room itself has changed, but the characters are exactly where they were before, which I think is really, really cool because they had to get up and move to another place, get back in their locations and their positions. Mm-hmm. Get blown around and then move back like and look like the only change has been the room and not them. That was so well done.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got it. That was as much as we give them a hard time for not having good continuity, that scene had really good continuity for them to move them to a whole nother set and keep all the places the same, which is very well done. Mm-hmm. So now they're like, yeah, let's go to this other world. And meanwhile, one of the detectives who had originally arrested Dixon Hill, AKA Picard, has shown up and he's, you know, also talking to the mob guys and he's like, come on, no one's going to believe you guys are from a different planet. This doesn't make sense and blah, blah, blah. And we don't know why this guy's here either. So well, then Wesley somehow miraculously gets the doors open. Yay. And what I thought was weird was the doors open and there's no one there. What happened to that whole team of engineers that were standing there?
You know,
like,
what?
Two seconds ago.
That was something that actually kind of made the rounds online that it was always sort of understood in the set that the holodeck, each holodeck had one entrance and that's it. And this one had multiple entrances because remember when they're trying to get out, Picard tells Data, like, try the other exit in the hall or in the hallway, like of the Dixon Hill office.
Yeah.
So there is, this is a holodeck apparently that has like more than one exit, which because when Red Block and Leech like walk out onto the Enterprise. Yeah, there's nobody
there's
there.
There's no one there. Yeah. There's no one there.
So Wesley and his team are all around the corner somewhere.
I'll buy that this was a second door, a second entrance to the holodeck. That works.
Well, remember this one too goes right into that wall where that really cool shot that we love is like the end of a long hallway. So it's it's got a couple different, I don't know, I guess. Who knows?
Cool. I'll take that there's nobody. It's a different door. Okay, that works for me. But then the holograms walk out and they exist outside of the holodeck
for a minute,
solid like 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, again, this is part of that. They're still learning how the holodeck, what the holodeck laws and rules are going to be on the show.
Yes.
But like the way that holodecks are created on the ship is because there are holo emitters. There are light projectors all around the holodeck. That's why you see that cool little grid thing that kind of looks like Tron. Right?
Yes.
Those are light emitters that are creating the illusion of matter. And if a hologram steps outside of that space, there's nothing projecting them. Like there's no physical space that they take up. So
this is why we're the right people for this job.
Right. So when that happened, I was like, oh, this is weird because like, and again, I'm thinking back to Voyager, whenever a hologram tries to step out of the holodeck, and we're actually going to see this
instantly.
We're going to see this also in later on in TNG is as their fingers start to exit the holodeck doors, their fingers disappear. And when they pull their hand back, their fingers come back.
Yeah.
And that's because the emitters are projecting the image of their body inside this square space, but not outside. So there's no way that those two guys could have walked out even for a minute and been standing there just hanging out, shooting the breeze, you know, and then slowly they kind of unravel from their feet up and they were conscious of their unraveling, which again, like they wouldn't have that sentience later on in the show where they're just unraveling. They're like, what's going on? You can't do this to me. Never.
Yeah.
And they kind of like,
Redlock.
Yeah. And it was just kind of like, wait, what? But okay. This is the first time that we're really seeing the holodeck at all. I mean, we've seen the holodeck before in the show, but this is the first time we're seeing the characters they're interacting with in the holodeck.
Yes. This is the first holodeck centered episode of all of TNG. And I think all of Star Trek.
Yeah, it could be.
That's like holodeck centered.
Yeah, that the whole episode takes place in a holodeck.
Yeah, and later, and you're right, because in later episodes, when they do the Sherlock Holmes bit and Moriarty gains sentience, they're trying to explain to him that he can't exist outside the holodeck. Remember, they throw a book or something out and the book
and disappears.
Just disappears instantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, they're still getting their feet out from under here, but they managed to get Picard. They managed to get everybody out. And Picard rushes to the bridge and does his speech in like 10 seconds. And the insect race is like, you have honored us. Like, we look forward to doing business with you. And everybody's clapping, which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah.
They're like,
I love that. It was like a NASA moment.
And Data comes back and he's still in his gorgeous pinstripe, double-breasted suit and sits down at comms. And I love when Geordi goes, so how was it, Data? And he does that voice, the like, it was a
40s mobster voice or whatever.
It was, oh God, it was so great. And I love that Picard's like, Data. He's like, oh, sorry, sir. setting course for whatever. I love that. And if I had seen like a still shot of that, which, you know what, I'm going to get a screenshot of that and post it up on our Instagram, the TNG podcast. It's a screenshot that, if you don't know the context of the scene, like, doesn't make any sense at all, because you see Picard and Data in 1940s suits and everybody else in Starfleet uniforms. And there's like no real interaction. They're just kind of sitting there like watching the, they're sort of just like propelling themselves away. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh my God, if I didn't know what this episode was about, I would have looked at it and been like, somebody's been playing with Photoshop or something.
That's one of my favorite things that they keep true about holodeck technology. And by the way, I would freaking love a holodeck. So let's get on that, people.
Yes.
VR is getting close, but I want the whole experience. Anyways, one of the things that they keep up with the whole like entirety of the holodeck is that you have to dress the part. Like you can't just holodeck your clothes, which to me, it's like, well, of course you could, because everything in there is just light emission. Like, of course you could just holodeck your clothes. You just go in and push a button and your whole outfit changes. They can absolutely do that. But for some reason they chose to say, no, when you go into the holodeck, you have to dress the part before you walk in.
Yes.
And I think that's so fun.
I think it's super fun too.
You know, and I love cosplay. So I'm like, that's so cool that you're like, everyone has to cosplay in order to get into the mood inside the holodeck.
Yes. You know, I agree with you. And I also just wonder about like what daily life on the ship would look like as you are going about your business and you see somebody walking down the hallway in like 12th century garb and you're like, oh, it must be either coming to or from the holodeck.
Totally. Yeah.
But anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. I say the episode was a throwaway, but more holodeck episodes, please. It's so much fun. So much fun. I totally see why they won an Emmy for this episode. They did an amazing job in the set decoration as well.
Yeah, I was totally geeking out over the set.
Anyway, all right. So I love this episode, but I'm ready to move on. How about you?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So guys, thank you so much for listening. Next week, we're going to cover season one, episode 12, Data Lore. And that's like all you, Charisse.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited.
Well, thanks for hanging with us. You guys, we'll see you next week.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.